This is Jason Jans, and I'm here with Mark Farnham, who is the Assistant Professor of New Testament and Theology here at Calvary Baptist Theological Seminary. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jason. It's good to be with you.
In our last interview, we talked about the history of fundamentalism, and now I kind of want to talk about the current issues that we have within fundamentalism. And I talked about this a little bit in the last interview, but I want to pick up with this same theme, and I want to talk about the fact that we have lived with the label of being anti-intellectual as a movement for a long time. In fact, even popular writings today will still call us that. And even Jim Singleton, from within the movement, said this: all too often the new evangelicals succumbed to, quote, the pride of intellect, unquote, and capitulated to a liberal position for the purpose of appearing scholarly and intellectual. Reacting to this, however, some fundamentalists have responded to the intellectual and scientific problems of the Bible with the pride of ignorance. Would you agree with Singleton there in his assessment?
Yeah, certainly some fundamentalists do revel in their ignorance. I don't think that's stereotypical or characteristic, because I see among many fundamentalists today a great concern for that. But among a good portion of fundamentalists, that is a high priority.
What stage of recovery do you believe we are at as a movement when it comes to our anti-intellectualism?
I think we are getting there. I think we have more and more leaders and men, scholars in fundamentalism, who can think, and I don't just mean think about issues, but can think theologically. And I really think that's the need of the day, to know the scriptures, to be able to handle the scriptures honestly, and to think theologically through the deep issues. And that requires a lot of training and a lot of education and a lot of thinking. And we have more and more of that taking place in fundamentalism.
From when did you enter seminary? What year?
I started seminary in 1989.
Okay, so in 17, 18 years of history, and you came right back to the same institution.
Yes.
Do you notice changes in the intellectual environment over 20 years?
Yes, certainly. Coming back to seminary was difficult because I had been out for almost 10 years, and the intellectual level has risen so much since I was in school that it was a challenge for me then as a young new professor to catch up and move ahead of where I had been when I finished seminary.
Why in the world did we ever view higher education with suspicion?
Well, we had good reason to. After the liberals took over the institutions in the early 20th century, it was a dangerous place to go. Like today, many, many young people, believers, went off to schools and lost their faith because they were not equipped and not ready for the challenge of refuting unbelief. And that's an area that we need to continue to work on. I don't think we're quite there yet.
A lot of guys will talk about, you know, I'm a historic fundamentalist, but I'm not a current fundamentalist. Fundamentalism has somewhat changed over what the issues were throughout the decades. How would you say over the last 100 years fundamentalism has changed its own definition?
Unfortunately, many fundamentalists who do not have a historical awareness have defined the movement, and it has become defined in a way of radical opposition to the culture, outrageous statements in order to rally people and to whip up fervency. The definition has changed in a negative way, in that people call themselves fundamentalists but don't really have a good idea of what that means, and certainly not historically.
Hmm. When it comes to looking at the movement, from the outside, I kind of get this if I would to interview a leader in evangelicalism. One of them said, how can there be so many of you and I've never heard of you? In fact, the last they heard from fundamentalism was back in the 60s and 70s, and Jack Hiles is firmly imprinted on their brain as that's what a fundamentalist is. And that is a significant part of the group that would call themselves fundamentalists, whereas we would probably distance ourselves from them. And what do you do about that when your identity is so tied to still a large portion that would really be anti-intellectual in their stance?
Well, I know for some young fundamentalists, their answer is just to stop calling themselves that and to distance themselves. I don't think that's the answer. I've studied at several new evangelical institutions, and they have a host of problems, ones I would never want to even touch. So I don't think the answer is to abandon fundamentalism. The answer is to find the best of fundamentalism, which is a stalwart commitment to the truth and a willingness to preach it, to fight for it, but to, on a personal level, rid yourself of the negative connotations of fundamentalism. And that depends on the area in which you live and minister. When I pastored, I did not describe our church as fundamentalist to people who asked me about it, just because there were other churches in town that called themselves that. And they were so radical, I did not want to be associated with them.
In our identity, it seems like we are centered around, because we're thrown into the same pool, it's because we're centered around the idea of militant contention for the faith. But really, outside of that, there's not much identity soteriologically. Even eschatologically, there's some variation. Can a movement survive without a doctrinal confessional center?
That's a good question. Presbyterian writer D.G. Hart recently wrote that we all ought to abandon the term evangelical or fundamental and go back to our denominations. And he put that book out as a call to Presbyterians to abandon evangelicalism and come back and be a Presbyterian, because at least there's a confession. In fundamentalism, that would be very hard to do, just because we tend not to have any confessions, and that's typical of Baptists anyways. But we are so diverse that in one sense, we do allow for divergence when it suits us. You look at almost any institution or group, they'll fellowship with people that don't really fit their classification or their confession, their unspoken confession. But if it suits them, then they'll fellowship with them. And I think we need to take an honest look at that and realize that that is not all bad, but we should also not negatively condemn anyone who does fellowship with those who differ from them in some theological issues.
So you're saying maybe the inconsistency of bringing in a creationist who would speak on a wide platform, but then they would be upset over anybody who was different from them as maybe a pastor in a church?
Sure. Having in someone who's Grace Brethren, but a well-known creationist, seems to be not a problem for most people. But then if you were to invite someone else who didn't have a specialty in the particular area, that becomes a matter of compromise in the minds of some.
So how then has separation changed in its focus in fundamentalism over the last century?
In our separation, we have become so exclusive in some cases that it's practically impossible to fellowship unless we all walk lockstep. And that was not true of early fundamentalism. They include a number of different theological strands, all conservative, a number of different denominations, all conservative, and they unified around a single issue. But the times have changed. We cannot reproduce historic fundamentalism. We must live out as fundamentalists in our day and age, and that's going to require some thinking and some talking about these issues, but we certainly can't keep isolated if we are going to hope to work together.
So in the new millennium here, what still distinguishes a fundamentalist from an evangelical?
I think there are two or three things that really distinguish the two groups. I would say one of the distinguishing marks is a commitment to inerrancy. The evangelical world is in an uproar right now because they are quickly becoming divided between those who still hold to inerrancy and many in the evangelical world that want to question it, qualify it, and in some way deny it. And that's never been a problem in fundamentalism. We have our own problem with issues of translations and versions, but we don't struggle with the issue of inerrancy. So that's one distinction. Another distinction would be our approach to culture. Evangelicals are far more open to culture and popular culture than fundamentalists are. And that's not all bad. As a fundamentalist, we ought to be generally suspicious of what comes out of the world, but realize that there is common grace and that unbelievers can produce works of culture that are that are worthwhile, that are good. And the third distinguishing mark would be our degree of separation. It's not fair or true to say that even new evangelicals or evangelicals never practice separation. Many conservative evangelicals do practice it, just not to the same extent that we do.
Let's go to the approach to culture. There seems to be confusion as to, 1 John 2, love not the world, and then people equate world with culture. Is that the correct corollary, or?
Yeah, there is a lot of confusion, and just as a general overview of the Bible presents two concepts of life in this world. One is cosmos, which is the world system in opposition to God, and that's what John says we should not love. But another concept is the Greek word bios. It's the everyday aspects of life that includes everything from the food we eat, to the clothes that we wear, to art and music and sculpture and architecture, all aspects of our culture in which most American Christians are deeply enculturated, those are not wrong. And the problem is when we get confused between cosmos aspects of the culture and bios aspects of the culture.
In our approach to culture, I think was it Niebuhr that wrote Christ and Culture? What is the appropriate approach based on his...
Niebuhr talked about, he did a historical survey of how Christians have related to culture for the last 2,000 years. He wrote this in 1951. And several different views that we will skip. We'll skip the Catholic and Lutheran views and the liberal views. But the two conservative views are Christ against culture. And he says this has been typical of Anabaptists, radical separatists, fundamentalists. But there's also the Reform view of transforming culture. The Reform view has a much more optimistic view that culture can be used to bring God glory. And I think some kind of combination of the two. I think we should stand against the aspects of our culture that are affected by sin and have been distorted and perverted. But we should also realize there are many aspects of our common everyday lives that are useful, are worthwhile, and can be glorifying to God.
What trends do you see developing in fundamentalism? Theologically, ecclesiologically?
I think one of the trends that I see is a polarization. I think fundamentalism, I think both fundamentalism and evangelicalism, there is a vast divide happening. Within fundamentalism, there are those who, as I said before, want to seriously evaluate where we are, make the Word of God and not fundamentalist culture the standard by which we judge things, and are seeking to reevaluate and retool to make sure that we are as biblical as possible. And then I see another part of fundamentalism that continues to go down the path of exalting some past mythological time of fundamentalism when everything was right, and if we can just maintain a sort of countercultural living in the past, anti-intellectualism, a lack of theology, just fervor and excitement and zeal without any substance, and I see this divide taking place where people seem to side on one way or the other.
Hmm. What do you think will help keep the new generation of fundamentalists from becoming just new evangelicals?
I think new generation of fundamentalists need to study and talk with evangelicals, not in the sense of dialogue, but to understand what's going on in evangelicalism. Some key evangelicals are moving more toward a fundamentalist view than we often realize because of the seeds of new evangelicalism are coming to bloom now, and they are destructive. Even someone like R.C. Sproul, not too long ago, wrote this: may we find the courage not only to affirm the fundamentals, but may we be given a double portion of the spirit of the fundamentalists. I think he realizes, after seeing where evangelicalism is going, and the fatal flaws there of compromise, that evangelicalism is not utopia. And the spirit of fundamentalism, of commitment to truth, is where it's at.
You've seen, it seems like you see in the last decade especially, that there's a definitely a movement within fundamentalism towards honoring intellectual development, maybe distancing itself from some of the cultural stuff. But then you see this also this movement within evangelicalism that is looking more separatistic, with Together for the Gospel, the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. Do you see any potential in the future where conservative evangelicals and fundamentalists will, and the progressive fundamentalists will have some form of unified cooperation?
I'm not sure how that can be avoided, actually. The way evangelicals, conservative evangelicals, are moving, they are becoming more conservative, more ardent for the faith, more striving for proclaiming and defending the truth, such that they are becoming more like some fundamentalists. And already I think we're seeing among a lot of our college students, men preparing for the ministry, more and more willingness to interact with conservative evangelicals, because in many cases, in their experience, if they're coming out of radical fundamentalism, they're seeing a greater commitment to truth, a greater love for truth and theology, and a genuinely holy life than they have found within fundamentalism. So I think it's already happening, and it won't be long before it's a regular occurrence that we interact with conservative evangelicals and find more of a kinship there than we do with others who call themselves fundamentalists but have really have abandoned the faith in one sense.
In regards to the young guys, much ink has been spilled in regards to the young fundamentalists, and you work with guys every day in the seminary who are headed into ministry. And as you see them, what are some current concerns that you have regarding the younger generation?
Some of the concerns I have is they do not always appreciate the battles that have taken place in the past. Sometimes they look at the excesses of previous generations of fundamentalists, and it's easy to critique in hindsight. But the truth is, many of our forebears in fundamentalism fought desperate fights and had much to lose and lost much. And my hope, as I teach, is that the younger generation would appreciate that. But I also hope that they don't try to continue to fight the fights of the previous generation. And that's the problem with some parts of fundamentalism. They're still fighting battles that took place decades or almost a century ago. And we have to realize that that new battles have come, and if we're not prepared to fight the new battles for the faith, then we are going to we're going to be ineffective.
Any other concerns you have besides appreciation for the past?
I think with the breaking down of some of the cultural taboos in fundamentalism, issues such as engagement with popular culture. My concern is that young guys will not have a lot of discernment and will not truly seek for biblical guidance for daily living. I'm also concerned about a passion for Christ that becomes a guiding influence in their lives. As education grows, there's more of a temptation to rely on your education. And I know for myself, the more I learn, the more I am driven to my knees in utter dependence upon God, that I not become self-reliant.
So those are maybe some of the negatives. What do you see as the positive with some of the young guys?
I am very excited about the passion that young guys have for theology, not just as a theology professor, but I think that if theology is biblically grounded, it will provide a solid faith that can face the issues of the day and give answers. I'm also excited for a passion and a boldness and a sense of pioneering work in many of these young men as they go to mission fields that seemed impossible to go to 20 years ago. So many young men thinking of going to China and other places in which they will probably suffer the loss of many things, and yet a fearlessness about it, and that's encouraging me.
Talk a little bit about Calvary Seminary. What do you think is encouraging this taking place here?
Well, I'm encouraged tremendously by the faculty that's been put together here. I think we are a faculty that has a great passion for scholarship, but also a passion for ministry. Almost every professor, I guess I would say every professor here, is deeply involved in various ministries here at Calvary and all over, preaching, helping churches. There is an excitement about among the faculty about working together and bringing our various disciplines together to form and to produce materials that will benefit the body of Christ.
Great. I close with a quote by David Wells in No Place for Truth, and he says, when we move from fundamentalism to evangelicalism, however, we are moving from a counter community to a community. Fundamentalism was a walled city. Evangelicalism is a city. Fundamentalism always had an air of embattlement about it, of being an island in a sea of unremitting hostility. Evangelicalism has reacted against this sense of psychological isolation. It has lowered the barricades. It is open to the world. The great sin in fundamentalism is to compromise. The great sin in evangelicalism is to be narrow. And Wells says that the death rattle has begun in evangelicalism. Do you believe that?
Yeah, David Wells predicted more than 10 years ago a major split coming in evangelicalism, where those who did not return to historic fundamentals of the faith and a commitment to truth would return to a second liberalism, and I think that's obvious and apparent that's happening today.
So it's still a day where fundamentalism needs to stand for the truth against liberalism.
That's right, and I think that we need to be aware of what the battles are today and to fight them, having learned all that we've learned from previous generations.
Great. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jason.